The format of this meeting is 2 10-minute speakers followed by our information break and then our main speaker who will speak for 30 minutes. Our first 10-minute speaker is Shauna.
Hi, I'm Shauna. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you so much, Nicole, for asking me to speak, although I was not grateful at the time she asked me. So nervous. But my sobriety date is July 4th, 2011, and I'm so grateful that is my sober date and that I haven't found it necessary to drink since. What it was like, I came into the rooms originally in 2007. A mess, like completely a mess, like not knowing anything about AA, didn't know I was an alcoholic, didn't think the alcohol was my actual problem. It was people, places, and things, you know. It was my mom, it was my job, it was the fact that I grew up in Brooklyn, it was the subway. I mean, it was everything but alcohol was my problem, because alcohol was the thing that made me feel better. And, you know, I came into 2007 from a friend, my drinking buddy. She, at the time, I was just making decisions based on self, just whatever the most immediate fix I could find at the time. And so I thought AA was going to be another government-assisted program that I could manipulate, just like food stamps and public assistance was. But it wasn't. And I started to see other people, you know, that had like long-term sobriety, short-term sobriety, people talking about God, people talking not about God, and I just wasn't ready, you know. I did hear a message of hope. It did give me a sense of hope, like maybe something is here, but I wasn't ready, you know. So I went back out and I continued to drink, and I was also using drugs. My life got so crazy in another 3 years, like from 2007 to 2010. It was just like I had like 9 different apartments in 2 years. I was just like, you know, blaming others, just not taking responsibility for myself and not putting the drink down, you know, just constantly just drinking through all of it, you know, not willing to accept that maybe, you know, I need to do something different, you know. Alcohol was the thing that, like, really, it was that, you know, like, I would never be able to stand up in front of, like, all these people and share so honestly had I, like, not been sober or had I not gone through the work in this program, you know, and which led me to having a relationship with the power greater than myself, you know, like, yes, I was scared before coming. It's all self-centered fear. I realize that today, but I'm just here to share my truth and what happened, you know, why and how I got here. And so in 2010, I hit a really bad bottom. You know, I had my last, well, not my last blackout, but it was like one of the last blackouts. And I woke up, or I came to, and, you know, I didn't have a cell phone because I lost it somewhere. And I checked my roommate's phone. I asked my roommate if I could use his phone to call my aunt so I could borrow money. It was just like, that's the mess, you know, that's what I was dealing with. And I saw an outgoing text message on his phone that said, "Yo, Shauna came home drunk last night, screaming at the landlord, like banging on the door, just crazy, right? That's just who I was." And my heart stopped when I read that, and I was like, "Oh man, like the jig is up, you know? Like this, I have to do something different." And a voice in my head told me, "Go back to AA." And so I went back to a meeting. I was living in Williamsburg at the time, and I went to this meeting on Manhattan Avenue. I don't know the name, but I just remember meeting a bunch of sober people, and they were telling me, giving me some good sober direction to take, and it was really helpful for me. And then they told me to go to this other meeting where there were younger people, and that was when it really hit me. It was like this meeting in Brooklyn where there was like these young people, and because I always thought AA was for old people and like bums. So I, like, literally, you know, and then eventually, and you know, I share this sometimes in another meeting I go to, or it depends. I'm just letting God speak through me. I'm not even planning what I'm going to say because it's not really about that, but when I came in 2010 in Williamsburg, and I saw that was the year that Ikipa was in New York City, and I saw like all these sober people, young, like partying on a roof, and I was like, what is happening here? And like, but I, God knew that I needed to see something like that to like get me, like entice me to want to be here, you know, to attract me to this program, because they say, you know, it's attraction, not promotion. And so when I saw that, I was like, whoa, you know, whoa, like this, okay, what's going on here? And so, you know, the fellowship kept me coming for a while, and thank you. And for me, you know, unfortunately, the fellowship wasn't enough to keep me sober. It wasn't enough to keep me away from that first drink, and I ended up drinking again. So from 2010 to 2011, I kept going in and out, in and out, in and out. And finally, on July 3rd of 2011 is when I had my last drink. And I remember I called someone. Actually, Melissa M. was my sponsor at the time. She's a member of this group. And I called her and I said, you know, I don't know if I'm an alcoholic. I don't care about it anymore. I know I can't do this. I'm just, what do I have to do? And Tuesday night, I came to this meeting. It was July 4th. And actually, no, July 4th was a Monday. I went to a sober barbecue in Brooklyn. And then Tuesday was the 5th. And I came here and I raised my hand and I said I had 2 days back. And then, you know, I have not looked back. You know, I immediately got involved in the step work. I got service commitments. You guys kept me really, really busy, and I'm grateful for that, because left to my own devices, I definitely would have been drinking again, because, you know, my disease centers in my mind, and so, like, I'm constantly thinking about me. And then if I'm not thinking about me, I'm wondering why you're not thinking about me. And then if you're not looking at me, why aren't you looking at me? And it's just, like, this constant me, 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 me. And I heard someone say, like, the ism in alcoholism is I self me, I sabotage myself. So it's, like, I just have to remember that when I'm thinking about myself. Like, even tonight before the meeting, I was so self-centered fear. So I had some people pray with me. What a beautiful gift, you know? And that's what I learned in AA. Like, I don't have to do anything by myself, you know? I come in here. Look at all you people, you know? You're all sober. You're all doing this. We, you know, there are 12 steps, which is recommended. If you're in a 12-step program, it's highly recommended you do the 12 steps. And that was the thing that really kept me away from a drink, is when my sponsor met me week by week, took me through the big book line by line, gave me some homework to do, look at myself, and then really like guide me into developing a relationship with a power that's greater than myself. And you know, that relationship has evolved and changed over the course of these almost 7 years. And that's the one thing that like just continues to grow and grow and grow. And whenever I feel fearful or in doubt or those thoughts crop in, I just remember I have to get a bigger God, you know. And it's really great to do service at a meeting, to do at any meeting. It's really humbling to come in and just like share my experience. Like, I'm just a drunk, you know, that's really all I am. And that's my greatest asset today is just sharing my experience, strength, and hope with someone who's like sick, you know. And unfortunately, there's some people that are willing and there's people that are not willing, but they all deserve the same love and attention that, you know, the ones that are willing do. And, you know, my sponsor, I have a sponsor now who's really just, she's so kind and she speaks to me with such compassion. And she tells me, like, you know, I struggle with sponsoring and I have two sponsees now and I'm so grateful for that. And, you know, I make mistakes, I fall short because I'm an alcoholic. And she's like, you know, but it's not our job to punish each other. You know, you're just here to carry the message and that's it. And like, leave the rest up to God. Like, I'm powerless over my own alcoholism. I'm powerless over yours too. But I can just, you know, all I can do is just lead by example and just hope that, you know, something happens. So thank you.
Our next 10-minute speaker is Alan.
Hi, everybody. I'm Alan. I'm an alcoholic. Some of my stats: I got sober December 3rd, 2016. I do have a sponsor. I'm part of the Atlantic Group. Oh, I'm sorry. And I'm on step 9, living in 10, 11, and 12. Is this a little high? Yeah, my biggest resentment is being this height. I wish I was a little bit taller, but yeah, so I'm going to go a little bit about what I was like before I started drinking to what I was like while I'm drinking, to the solution, living one day at a time. And again, this is a one day at a time program, especially for you newcomers. Man, if any one of you met me before I was, up to the age of 18, I was such a nice guy. I had such a wonderful heart. Like, I had a lot of fears, man. I always wanted to excel in things. I mean, I was a great student. I was a great athlete. I feared my family a lot. My dad was my biggest coach. My mom was my biggest supporter. But growing up, I had this thing in me, I can't really explain it, that made me an alcoholic, and that was fear. I was guided by fear. I was afraid to socialize with people. I was afraid to identify with people. I mean, everybody grows up in a crazy household, you know, and mine was very crazy, but, and a lot of chaos going on. But, you know, I was able to control the situation. I was able to live my life. So I had good, you know, amazing grades. I got to a great college, a great university, actually, up in Cornell, up in Ithaca. It was my dream university. I was able to get in. But let me tell you, that decision to go there ended up being my worst decision ever. I didn't even know what I got my degree in. I think it was in alcoholism. And I'm still trying to look for my diploma, but I swear, you know, when I first got there on campus, I saw everybody was happy and they had a glass of champagne in their hands. You know, and I remember calling my mom and she was like, you mean, I was like, hey, everybody's having a drink. And she's like, no, do not touch the drink. And I was confused why she would. I mean, at that time, you know, my dad was a recovering alcoholic, but he was a dry alcoholic, so. I'll never forget that phone conversation. She actually warned me that you're going to end up like your father. I was like, please. Like, I'm going to end up my dad. You know, he drank all day and worked all day. But guess what? That night I picked up my first drink, and that feeling that I had, I mean, I felt the rotation of the earth move. That's how crazy it was. Like, I felt superhuman. All my fears went aside. I was able to talk to girls. I mean, I was able to do things I couldn't even imagine. Sober. Like, unbelievable life, you know. Like, right away, like, my disease took off like a rocket ship. I started selling drugs on campus. I started brokeraging women. I started doing crazy stuff. I was the biggest sinner on campus. To make a long story short, man, I ended up getting my diploma. It was an accident because I had to pass a music 101 class, and I went drunk every day to class, and I was so miserable and depressed my senior year at that time. All I cared about was just getting that diploma. And I went to my professor. I'm like, I can't take this final. He's like, you got to take the final. He's like, listen, I'll do you a favor. I'll give you an oral exam, and you're the first person in 15 years we'll give an oral exam to. Guess what? I showed up to the oral exam. All I needed was a C-, and it was a classical music class. I showed up drunk and high, and he asked me 10 questions. I was only able to answer 5, but he passed me because he thought I was autistic. I had nothing to cheer for at that point. Like, my IQ just severely was detrimental at that point. I was mixing prescription drugs because I didn't know how to maintain the pH of my own body, like normal levels or whatever. So I was drinking and taking Adderall at the same time to try to feel normal. But okay, I got my degree. Now, the next 10 years of my life was a complete obliteration. I think I lost my 20s. I mean, I spent most of my time hanging out with the wrong people. I was fortunate enough to work with family, and I mean, I should have been fired so many times, but they believed in me. I mean, I never, up to this day, have ever written a resume, because they saw me as a young kid, my strength, my power, my tenacity to help people and to do work. They saw that fire that I had in me. You know, but that all went away after that first drink. It's something that, to this day, I think about. I mean, I'm learning to let go, but I'm thinking about it. So, kind of lost track a little bit. Yeah, so, yeah, in my 20s, pretty much hung out with the wrong people. I got away from my college friends. I thought the coolest places to hang out were the bars and the clubs. I was a regular here at the Gansevoort Hotel and the Meatpacking District. And obviously, at the end of the night, I would end up in Harlem or out in Brooklyn somewhere. Passed out on the train ride home, you know, something crazy, you know. Every time I drank, I always drove. I couldn't just be responsible. Like, even though I considered myself a designated driver with my peers, I always had a couple of drinks. I ended up getting pulled over every time. One time I drove, I ended up in North Jersey driving over the edge of a ravine. It was like a 150-foot drop, and the car just, I mean, I was probably going 80, 90 miles an hour. Fell asleep behind the wheel. Thank God it was an SAV. Ended up at the end of the road, hit an embankment at the bottom of the ravine, and all the airbags deployed. I don't remember if I had my seatbelt. I was bloody, broken bones. I ended up crawling out of that. And I blacked out as soon as the cops came. I ended up waking up at the hospital bed, handcuffed. Imagine both hands being handcuffed, with my mom crying and the police officer that arrested me telling her, he's under your custody now. Like, that was a very painful thing. And that was on a regular basis that I was dealing with. I just could not control my drinking. I've had stories where, I've actually been shot at a few times, but they missed, thank God. I've gotten into fights at bars. Every time I traveled with family, I'd be drinking and doing crazy things. But what got me here, and this is the most important part of my story, is, I've been to three different rehabs, two psych wards. My last visit in rehab was at Promises in the end of 2015, early 2016. Spent 38 days there. And what was different in this rehab was, I was just desperate to get clean. I came out of a hospital. I was coming off seven different prescription drugs and liters of alcohol. It was Christmas night, and my parents were crying. They're like, we don't want to see you die. You know, you're our son. You know, we want to see you live. And I bargained with them. I'm like, I won't go to rehab unless you pay me. Obviously, that didn't happen, but I'm like, listen, I'll go for you guys. I'm not going for me. I'm going for you. That's what I said. That's how I bluntly said. So I went. And after 4 weeks of detoxing, and that was the worst detoxing in my life, they titrated me off these insane drugs. And I was sweating, convulsing. I felt like I was in a microwave about to explode. But I got out of there, and I met my future sponsor from Atlantic Group. 2 days before I was going to leave back to New York, he saved my life. He gave me his phone. Actually, I went up to him. That my peers in my so-called graduating Promises class, which I'm so proud of, that diploma is more important than my college diploma, hands down. So 1 minute, that's it, Dan. Okay. So I met my sponsor. He told me to call him. I called him. When I flew back to New York, I stayed in a sober house for 6 months. Oh, it was the hardest 6 months, but you know what got me through it? Going to this meeting every Tuesday. Going to this meeting, working with my sponsor. I carry this Bible with me everywhere I go. This is ingrained in my heart. This is the big book where I go through all the step work. I do all my prayers. I just pray I never put myself in the situation I put myself in the past. You know what I mean? And, you know, being a newcomer, you know, it's not easy, but you're the most important person here, because when I was in your shoes, I didn't know what direction to take. But the way my life turned around, the things that I'm accomplishing now, like talking to you guys, like I almost failed communications and I'm talking a group of you. That's just remarkable. And thank you so much for your support. Love you all.
Hi, my name is Khani. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you, Jeff and Adam, for asking me to speak. My first day sober was in this church, so I'm a little emotional. My sobriety date is August 16th, 2007. My sponsor's name is Chaya. She's sitting right there. I'm pretty sure she has a sponsor. I have worked the steps that are usually on the shades, and I am living current in 10, 11, and 12, I would say. Just going to keep it super simple and do like what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now, because that's what we do. So I grew up in a super Jewish Orthodox home. There was a lot of kids. I know that they say alcoholism is a family disease. I am one of 11, and nobody else drinks, so it's just interesting to me. There's other addictions in my family, but I'm the only one who finds the need to use alcohol to fix my problem. It's fascinating to me when I hang out with my sister and she has wine and I'm like, why are you not drinking it? She doesn't want to. She doesn't need to the way that I needed it. So I grew up super Orthodox. My father was a rabbi and I loved it. I loved the rigidity and the rules of being so religious. It gave me a sense of safety in a home that was not safe. I took everything to like beyond what you're supposed to do. Even as a kid, like I was just so scared of breaking the rules and it made me feel so safe. when I found alcohol, I didn't need that safety anymore. Literally, I started drinking at 15 and all of a sudden my higher power became alcohol and I slowly started to let go of the things that had kept me safe in terms of like kosher and Shabbos. Like I was like, maybe I could put lipstick on, which is not a big deal for you, but for me, as a 15-year-old, like that's considered coloring, and you're not allowed to do that on the Sabbath. And I was like, I'm gonna try. It was like it started very small, and I remember the feeling of ease and comfort that I got from my first drink, as if it was yesterday, which just makes me believe that I belong here. Like I don't know anybody else in the regular world to be like, let me tell you how it was 15 or 20 years. I'm not good at math. Like it was a long time ago, and I still remember like it was yesterday. Everyone else was in synagogue. It was on the Sabbath, and I thought I was the first person to invent vodka with orange juice. I thought I was a genius. I was like, no one's going to know I've been drinking. And I remember just taking that sip and just feeling like, I'm closing my eyes because I'm picturing and I'm feeling like the leather couch. I was like, oh, I'm going to be okay in the world. Alcohol is legal. That was literally the first thought I had as a 15-year-old, as if like, I'm going to be fine now, you guys. I can just keep drinking. Yeah, things weren't great, but I don't know why I thought I needed alcohol to be okay in the world. I never looked older than I am, so I was never ever like able to get a fake ID or anything, but there was alcohol available to me at my sister's house on the Sabbath. So I would drink on the weekends and I would live for the weekends. I grew up in Los Angeles, and like a couple months before I turned 21, I moved to New York. I had no plan. It was a very alcoholic. A friend of mine was visiting me from New York, and she was like, you should move to New York. And I was like, that is a great idea. And a month later, I was living here. I didn't have a job. I didn't have a place to live. I had like $452. And I was like, this is going to be great. Just irresponsibly like left everyone else with like, you fix whatever I'm leaving behind. Like I was just like, I'm out of here. And then I turned 21 and that was it for me, really. I turned 21 and I could use my ID and it worked. And I basically started drinking every day. There was a need. I can't describe the need. It wasn't like I might drink. It was like I needed to drink. I woke up in the morning and I was like, all right, it's 8:30. I'm going to go to work. Then I get out at 5. I'll be home by 5:30. I can have that first drink in my body by 5:40. Like, I could not stand to be sober. I couldn't do laundry sober. I couldn't go grocery shopping sober, which really consisted of rice cakes, American cheese, and potato chips. Like, I did not know how to feed myself. So I would, anything I was doing that was outside of my house, I needed to have alcohol in my bag. Heavy, heavy vodka drinker. It worked really fast. I didn't understand beer. I still don't. it's fine. I don't need to understand beer and the people that drink it. The hangovers, let's just talk about that for 30 seconds because those are amazing. I just assumed that I would feel hungover every single morning for the rest of my life. And there was nothing wrong with that. I was used to it. I was like, okay, it's fine. I'm going to feel really, really bad till around 12. And then I can start the countdown of when I'm going to get my next drink. I always say this in my story. I remember this like clear memory of my face pressed against the bathroom cold tile floor, feeling very safe because I was near the toilet. And I was like, I'm just going to sleep here. It's closer than getting up and having to go and throw up. And I remember thinking, like, this is great. I just need to find, this is great. This is working. I just need to find somebody who's very wealthy to marry so that we can hire a nanny so that in the mornings when I'm hungover, like, someone else will take care of the kids. I was single, no prospects, and just drinking all the time. But I just never thought in my life that I could have a life without vodka in it. Being sober was so painful. And if you're new and you have 2 days, if you have 8 days and it's painful, it does not stay that way. I wake up and I am excited for my life every single day. It doesn't happen right away for some people. Some people it does. I'll get to the good part of me getting sober. It's a great story. I'm walking down the street on Kingston Avenue in Crown Heights, and I bump into a girl who I knew was sober. And something came out of my mouth. I don't know. I did not want to say the words, but I was like, hey, you still going to meetings? And she was like, yeah, I'm on my way to one now. And I was like, oh, that's crazy. Like, why would you go on a Sunday? Felt bad for her. I was like, that's so sad. And also, like, she was like, why didn't you come? I was like, oh, no, I have plans. Like, what I meant by that is I have alcohol in my bag that I need to drink right now, especially after talking to somebody sober. Sober people just made me very uncomfortable, mainly because I didn't know how they did it or why. And so I remember she said, okay, you know, there's this young people's meeting called Never Had a Legal Drink. Let's meet there on Thursday. And I was like, yeah, let's do that. Yeah, Thursday's great. It was Sunday. I'm like, she's not going to remember. It's Sunday. Like, who remembers to call people 3 days later? So I remember I was at lunch and I got a text from her. I was like, hey, are we on for tonight? And I was like, what? I was like really like mad. Like, how do you remember that? And I had plans to go out for drinks with my friends. So I was like, I have plans. And she was like, well, if your friends care about you, they'll meet you after. And I was like, whoa, that's controlling. Like, don't tell me about my relationships with my friends. And so I asked them, I'm like, I'll meet you guys an hour later, like as if it's the end of the world if I show up an hour later for drinks, right? So I walk into the room, and I do have to say that I was not ready to hear the message of hope. I walked in there, and everybody was smiling, and I was mad. And I didn't believe anybody in the room had sobriety. I was like, this person just said they had 56 days. Yeah, right. You can't go 56 days without a drink. And if you could, why are you smiling and bragging about it? Like, I was like, very angry. This is weird. My current sponsor was the speaker that night, and I knew her from the Orthodox community. I think she's okay with me saying, yes, we did not like each other. And so when I saw her speaking, I was like, oh my God, are you kidding me? Like, this is, of course she's here. Like, I was like, oh, sorry. We have since worked through those issues, so it's fine. I don't know if I've ever said that with her sitting here, so it's weird, but we've talked about it. So I did not get sober that night. Shocker. I went out for drinks with my friends, and I was like, okay, maybe I'm not going to drink vodka for a little bit. And so I was like, oh, I'm going to stick to wine. I'm going to try wine. I hate wine. I hate it so much. I don't understand it. So I was like, I'm just going to do wine because I couldn't be sober. So the next couple weeks, I'm drinking wine and getting very sick. And then a couple weeks later, it was August. This guy I knew had 27 days, and he was coming to this meeting regularly. His sponsor, who was his sponsor, is not anymore, but who is still sober, is sitting in the fourth row. sorry to call you out. And he was, my friend was like, come to this meeting. It's called the Atlanta Group. I'm like, okay, fine, I'll check it out, whatever. And my friend who drove me, just to like give you an example of like where my head was at, I was not planning on getting sober. My friend who drove me was getting high in the car, and I was like, I'm just going to check out a meeting. I'll meet you after. And I got to the meeting, and it was a Thursday night beginner meeting. And my friend was like, you're going to have to stand up and say your name. I'm like, I'm not standing up. Like, I don't. He's like, you're going to have to say your name, your sobriety date, your sponsor's name, what step you're on. I was like, dude, I don't have any of that, and I'm just checking this out. Like, just relax. So we, I don't know if you guys, well, you guys have been to the Thursday night. You guys have been there. Great. Okay. So they make everybody stand up. There's no getting away with, I'm just going to pass. But I didn't have the courage to stand up, so my friend had to push me out of my chair. And so I stood up and I said, it's just very crazy that it was in this room. I know you guys have moved, I think, right, to a different location, but it was upstairs. And, I'm going to cry. It's fine if I do. It's happened. I said, hi, my name is Khani. I'm an alcoholic, and I have one day. Whew. And this huge weight just, like, came off of my shoulders, and I was like, what? And everybody just started clapping and cheering, and I was like, this is for me. This is amazing. And then this woman came over to me after I got literally swarmed. And what's funny is with my higher power is that, like, had someone else come here for their first day, they might not have stayed. That might have been too overwhelming for me. I'm an attention seeker. I'm trying to use nice language. So I needed that to come back. Had someone else been there, they might have been like, I can't do AA. I was like, I want AA, right? This woman came over to me. She was really tall, really pretty. I don't know if she's here. It's irrelevant. She saved my life. She said, I'm going to be your sponsor. And I was like, I have no idea what you're talking about, but sure. She was hot. I was like, okay, let's do it. I had no idea what was happening. I had no idea what a sponsor was, clearly. So I went out. I texted my friend who had dropped me off. I was like, hey, I'm not going to make it. I'm going to just like, we're going to this diner. I don't know. Something's happening. I got a book. I'm going to see you later. I got a book that basically changed my entire life. So I said to this woman, I was like, I have alcohol in my freezer. Like, I can't keep it there. She was like, all right, call me when you get home and I'll you can pour it out with me while I'm on the phone. And I was like, okay, that sounds safe, you know. So I got home and I called this stranger and I was like, hey, I'm pouring it out. And I just remember watching the vodka, like the thick liquid go down the drain, and I was like, oh my God, like, I have no idea how to live without this in my body. I don't know what I'm gonna do, but like, I trusted that you guys did, and I was like, I'm just gonna keep coming, I guess. I don't know how to do this. I don't know how to do anything without vodka in my body. And then I said to her, there's another bottle in my closet. Should we get rid of that? And she was like, yeah, let's get rid of that. You might be in the right place. And it wasn't like the small, it was like the big Grey Goose one, full, just in case I finished the one in the freezer. I blamed it that I had a roommate, but she never drank. It was just for me. So then my life started. I learned in here that one day at a time, I don't have to drink. And a miracle was given to me that night. The obsession was removed from my body. I read the book. I opened it up the first night. Wow, I'm so happy it's here. And I don't know what compelled me to even open it, but that first night I read this part that changed my life. And anytime, here we go. Men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. It's like, why else would you drink? I didn't understand. The sensation is so elusive that while they admit, okay, great. They are restless, irritable, and discontented unless they can again experience the sense of ease and comfort which come at once by taking a few drinks. Drinks which they see, thank you, others taking with impunity. And I was like, okay, I have this thing. I have it. I know that I have it. And I conceded to my innermost self in that moment that I am a raging alcoholic And I've never questioned it since. That is not everybody's story. That is my story. That was August 15, 2007. And life has happened. And it has been, I'm not one of those people that come up here and be like, it's been amazing. Let me tell you everything. It's been awful a lot of the time. It's been really bad and hard. There's been a lot of pain, a lot of loss, a lot of trauma. But I know that I'm an alcoholic, and I know that drinking doesn't work anymore. So reaching for the bottle is not an option for me. I've learned in here to do other things. I'll just go quickly that I started working the steps pretty early on. I found another sponsor that was not a part of this group, so I started going to another group. But every time I tell my story, I mention my first day sober was at the Atlanta Group Beginners Meeting because it changed, it saved my life. I don't know that I would have gotten sober if I went to a small meeting and no one came over to me. I needed that, and I needed the, like, instant community. I started calling strangers right away and be like, hey, what do? I'm away with my friends. I'm designated driver, and, like, they're all drunk. She's like, do you want to be there? I'm like, I don't know. Like, I didn't realize I didn't have to do the same things that I was doing when I was drinking, you know, at, like, 27 days, I went to Vegas because I had a plan. I had a trip already planned, and I brought my big book, and my sponsor, we read the book while I was, like, in the hallway while my friends were doing things in the hotel room that I'm not allowed to talk about here. You know what I mean? And I was like, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to be here reading my big book with my sponsor in the hallway. And I drank a lot of Red Bull that first year. I don't drink Red Bull anymore. Okay, so let's do steps. Step one was easy for me because I didn't want the life that I had anymore, and I wanted what you guys had. It's funny, I mentioned that I grew up Orthodox, so in my mind I already had a higher power, but I actually didn't because I'm not Orthodox anymore. So that higher power doesn't actually work because it works for when you're Orthodox, but if you're not keeping the laws, it's like you're not really connected because it's like you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing. And so it took a couple years of being in this program before I realized, oh my God, I don't have a higher power at all. That was interesting to start to develop. And it only recently, not to show off, but it only recently, I would say in the last year, really feels like I have a connection to something bigger than myself. They said the time was going to fly. They were not kidding. There's 2 minutes left, you guys. I'm just kidding. sorry. Just trying to lighten the mood. Alcoholism is so fun. Okay. So, little tidbits of steps. The fourth step, I've done it 3 times. Every time I'm doing it, I'm uncomfortable, and I realize how resentful I am, and, like, my resentments are sort of, like, glaring in my face, and I'm like, am I always like this? And I have to remember, oh, no, I'm in the fourth step. And if you're counting days and you don't know what that is, don't even think about it. Just come to a meeting tomorrow and share what's going on. I don't want to scare anybody away from all this hard work that we do here, because you don't have to do it until you're ready or until your sponsor tells you to, and then you have to. I had a couple of situations that happened that I like to share about. I had this one, it's not a situation, but like I had this one thing when I was doing my steps the second time around. I was with a new sponsor, my sponsor now. So we've been together, what's the math? 7 years? Something? Okay. And it came up on my list that I was taking money from the petty cash from work to pay for my lunch. There was a lot of loose cash in the business that I used to work in, like lots. Don't want to incriminate anyone. And so I was like, they're not going to notice. It's $7. It's like not a big deal. But when you do that every day, it adds up. And so I was doing that sober for many years. I was doing it hungover, and then I was also doing it sober. I'm like, they probably want to pay for my lunch. They just didn't tell me, you know? So I was like, it came up on my list, and the minute it came up, I had to stop doing it. But I said to my sponsor, I'm like, there is no way I am ever making this amend. I am never going to go in there and be like, hey, for 7 years, I was at my job for 15 years. So for 7 years, that's a lot of $7 salads, by the way. And she would say, okay, pray for the willingness. I'm like, I'll pray. I'm not making that amends, ever. I was living with a partner at the time, and I used that as an excuse, like, well, if I lose my job, it's going to affect her. And in the big book, it says, you know, whether to would harm us or others. And she's like, that's not what they're talking about at all. You can't use the big book as, like, a way to not do an amends, you know? They say that you should be willing to go to jail. I was like, oh, my God. Okay, I'm still not willing. So that was at 3 years sober. We had this conversation, and then we had it every couple of months. It would come up, and I'd be like, not ready. And every time I went to an eighth-step meeting, I had shame and remorse and, like, oh, my God, I have this thing. But my sponsor's crazy for making me. I would, like, literally share like that. Like, it's not, like, really, like, I have to make amends, but, like, I don't know. Okay, so let's just put that on the shelf. Fast forward. I'm 7 years sober. The relationship that my partner that I was protecting, her life, you know, we broke up, and I had to leave the apartment, and I had to move in with my grandmother. Not I had to. I got to. I had the opportunity to live rent-free with my grandmother. See the difference in perspective? That happens as a... as a way of retrospect, it was like, oh, that was the best thing that could have ever happened to me. But at the time, I cried every day. And if you went to my home group, you would know I'm not exaggerating. I cried every day for 6 months that I was living with my grandmother and I wanted to find an apartment. But in the meantime, I develop a relationship with my grandmother and I show up for her. And I didn't even know who she was before I moved in with her. She literally let a stranger essentially move into her house. And she's Orthodox and I look like this. And she's like, move in. Sure, you're my granddaughter, you know? Had I been drinking, there's no way she would have wanted me around, you know? So 3 months in, I'm doing my nightly prayers. Just as a side note, I have never gone to bed since coming here. Well, no, since doing my third step, not thanking my higher power for helping me stay sober. Every night, I get on my knees and I say, thank you for helping me stay sober. And in the morning, every morning, I get on my knees and I say, thank you for helping me stay sober. Yesterday, please stand between me and the first drink today. So I'm doing that, and all of a sudden this, like, feeling comes over me like, oh my God, I've been here for 3 months. That's around the same amount of money that I owe my bosses. Because I did the math with my sponsor. We guesstimated it around 30, so uncomfortable to say, it's a lot of salad, $3,200, right? Because it was many years. And it adds up one day at a time, right? So I immediately get off my knees. It was like 10:45 at night. I call my sponsor. I'm like, I'm willing. It's not my money. I have to get rid of it. And she's like, all right. You're not making the amends tomorrow. You're going to write a script. We are going to write a script. You can't go in there tomorrow throwing money in their face. They're going to think you're crazy. We spent a couple nights writing the script. We had written one years ago that I was, like, not willing. I took it out. I still had the notebook, and we changed it a little bit. And it was, like, a week before my seven-year anniversary. I remember it was a Friday. I was shaking out of my pants, and I used to work for Orthodox Men. Not that that matters or has anything related to this story. I'm sorry that I even brought that up. And so I go in there and I say, I need to talk to you. And I had to do it separately because they were two brothers. And one of them knew that I was sober and one of them didn't. And the one that didn't need to know. It was irrelevant to the story. So I just said, I just want to let you know there was a time when I was ordering lunch for you and I was paying for lunch with my own, with your money. And I didn't ask. So I wanted to, and I said, I guesstimated at how much that was and I wanted to pay you back. And they were like, how much is it? And I was like, $3,200. It's a lot of greens. So they were like, okay, thanks. Yeah, we'll take it. That was it. We never talked about it again. Except when I went home, I said to my sponsor, I'm like, oh, I'm going to, you know, write them a check. She was like, but did you take a check or did you take cash? I'm like, cash. She's like, so then you need to give them cash. I was like, oh my God, I have to have another conversation with them. But I did. I went back in on Monday, and I was like, hey, oh my God, there's 5 minutes left. Okay. Hey, I took cash, so I'm going to put cash back. And they're like, great, cool, no problem. So I did that. That was 5 years ago? Thank you. And I thought that, okay, now this is my out. I did my amends. Now I'm going to be able to leave my job because I did not like it. I hated it so much. And I was like, all right, within the next 6 weeks, I'm going to be finding a new job because my higher power works like that. Not true. I needed more growing up to do. I stayed at that job up until 5 weeks ago. I needed to still grow and learn and be uncomfortable and hate my job every single morning and wake up praying to be grateful to have a job to wake up for. I hated it. I hated it. I hated it. I cried. I was in so much pain. But you know what? I worked down the street from a meeting called New But West, and I got to go there every day for lunch. And sometimes my living amends was not going to the meeting and staying and being a worker among worker. I hate that term because it's so hard for me to be that. Something changed my life in October, and it sounds crazy, but I went away to California to visit my family, and I was there, and I have a friend who's in the program, and she's like, I just booked this trip to Hawaii, and I'm like, that's amazing, you're going to have so much fun. She's like, you're going to come. I'm like, I'm not. I'm very scared of change, anything new, anything like change of plans, I can't deal. I have a lot of anxiety, even in... especially in recovery, because before I was just drinking. I was no time to be anxious. I was like, I'm not going to Hawaii. She's like, you are. So I walked through the fear of going to Hawaii, and we spent 4 days together, and I realized in Hawaii that I have been letting fear rule my life. I kept telling myself, you can't leave your job. You don't know how to do anything else. You can't leave your job. And I have been believing that voice this whole time. And I came back and I said to my sponsor, I'm ready to leave. I'm ready to leave. I don't know what it's going to look like. I'm going to surrender my job. I can't keep working here. It's killing me. My hair started falling out. Like, literally, it was really stressful. Oh, by the way, I don't have cancer. I'm totally healthy. This is just alopecia. I forgot to mention that. In case you were wondering if I'm dying, I'm not. Totally healthy. Just have a little stress problem. So I come back and I one more thing that happened in Hawaii. I spent time with this woman who's in the program, who's one of my best friends, and she sleeps with her phone on airplane mode. And I was blown away. I was like, what? How? She's like, and I don't check it until I do my 11th step. And I was like, that is insane. That could never happen for me. I'm addicted to Instagram. That's not going to happen for me. And I did that one day at a time. As a result of seeing the way she lived her life and her morning routine, because we were in Hawaii, I would have not particularly asked her about it. But seeing how she lived it and really kept to it, I was like, oh, I want that. And so I come back from Hawaii and I started sleeping with my phone in airplane mode. I know that sounds crazy, but I don't check what other people are doing until I connect with my higher power. So I wake up in the morning, I have books by my bed, I read them. I get on my knees and I pray, and then I go into my living room and I meditate, and I have been doing that I've been meditating for years, but something has changed since I got back from Hawaii. The meditation feels more personal to me, and I am able to really just be with my breath, which, if you know me, is insane and also a miracle that I can do that for 10 minutes in the morning. Also, if you're new, don't worry about meditation. That comes so much later. Don't worry. If I were 2 days and someone was talking about meditating, I'd be like, I just want to drink. So you're fine. You're in the right place. Thank you. Fast forward. This woman reaches out to me on Instagram and offers me a job. That's how I got my job. I just have to say that. Instagram is a real thing. And I was able to leave my job as a woman of grace and dignity and give them a month's notice. Way too long, by the way. Don't ever do that. Just give 2 weeks. Doesn't matter how long you've been there. I thought I was doing the right thing, but it was too long. And now I'm at this new job, and I'm scared every day. But she trusts me, and she wants me there. And I don't have to drink. And I go to a lunch meeting every day because it's around the corner from my old job. So I still go to my home group. I didn't have a chance to mention sponsees and how much they change your life. I'm a little self-centered. I'm sorry. But they do. And thank you guys for listening. Thank you for my sobriety.